Toyota. Get the feeling. Top executives from some of Connecticut's best companies share their vision. Talk 1080.
Woody. Woody McDonald. I must talk to you about this movie you want me to be in.
Yes. Well, you'll be playing a mentally defective piece of office equipment that goes to a psychiatrist because of your sexual problems. A very complex, subtle role.
I cannot do it. I must run for governor instead.
It's funny, but because of your accent, it almost sounded like you said you were going to run for governor.
Yes, run for governor.
You know, don't take this personal, but you're a Nazi. And there are bowls of garlic that are capable of more complex thought processes.
Do not say this, or I will snap your tiny neck and crush your brains with my boots.
What are you going to do when people bring up the fact that an auric vacuum cleaner is slightly more qualified?
I will kill them, and break them, and hurt them, and they will die. All of you will die when I'm governor.
You know, it's a lovely message, with a little fine tune.
Go home to your scrawny Asian teenage bride, or I'll be forced to pump bullets into your disgusting noodle body.
I think I just remembered a urology appointment. I'll be leaving.
This is Arnold Schwarzenegger, running for governor. Vote for me, or I will kill Woody Allen. No, wait. If you vote for me, I will kill Woody Allen, and Gary Coleman, and Bob Hope.
He's already dead.
Wow, that's great.
Bruce and Colin shall return.
As you, many people know, there's currently an A-hold probe of the company Royal A-hold. It's a Dutch retailer. Can I continue?
I'm sorry.
I'm trying to do a news item.
Okay. Sorry, I'm terribly
and,
sorry.
Apparently, three of the salespeople from Sara Lee Corporation did sign inaccurate documents that could have been used to help inflate the earnings of U.S. Food Service, which is, of course, the United States subsidiary of A-hold. So, all I'm saying is, what's unfortunate about this, obviously, is that Sara Lee, we love their pancakes, their cheesecakes, their ice cakes, maybe most of all their bites.
Right.
They have, you know, what's the whole line of product called Bites? They have the Sara Lee chocolate-dipped original cheesecake bites.
Hard to beat those bites.
And all of those bites have now been dragged through this A-hole thing, and I just wonder if they'll ever taste the same.
Well, they come in the 540 with the Las Vegas police guy.
Howard. What? Deputy Chief, I mean.
Something like that, yeah. Speaking of police, I was just reading about the plans for Rentschler Field. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but they're opening a football stadium in East Hartford.
No, I've heard something.
Yeah, I think some media coverage of it, I believe, but not much. Anyway, apparently, one of the sort of interesting things about this is there was some kind of debate basically about kind of who's in control of East Hartford while there's a football game.
Would it be East Hartford Police by any chance?
Not really, no.
No, it's the state police?
It's more complicated than that. Initially, Mark Ryan announced that the state police, the head of security.
What's Mark Ryan doing announcing?
He's our third. Don't ask questions.
The budget chief, isn't he?
Well, ask too many questions.
Oh, sorry.
You're
like that little old lady at the press conference that day.
That's right.
Hustled out by a bunch of big...
But Attorney General Richard Blumenthal confirmed that Mark Ryan, had the power to in fact, decide who was going to head up security for Rentschler Field, and he decided that state police would do that. Only after months of talks did the state police, East Hartford police, and UConn police agree to have joint command of security on game days. So I thought joint command was more for like the Dave Matthews concert. But
probably would be.
Generally, local police will handle traffic on the streets.
Yep.
And while state police will be in charge of the actual stadium grounds, and UConn police will sleep. No, they actually will provide fewer officers than the other two agencies, but they will assist with stadium security.
Why are the state and UConn police even involved with this?
Because it is, you know, like a sovereign, it is like sovereign nations.
It's not a sovereign nation. It's in East Hartford.
Swinewood! What do you know about this?
I don't know anything about it. I just feel like being
awesome. The fatherland has put you on this football stadium. Now stand up and salute it. There'll be no more questions.
Okay.
This is a checkpoint. Take off your clothes. We are here to have fun and enjoy football.
Tomorrow belongs to me. I'm going to get in trouble for saying this.
Probably.
There is a little bit of kind of an Albert Speer thing going on over there. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
over there today.
Who's that?
He's leaving here.
Yeah.
Salini.
Yeah, I'm sure
he's all over it.
He's probably there with all of his Yukon paraphernalia, getting a good seat and stuff like that, you know.
I had to get there early, you know.
Big cooler. Get there early.
You get there when the bikes are in the bed.
48 hours
before. I went into really good tenants before they're sold out.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I don't know. I mean, I don't even know how I feel about this stadium anymore. I mean, I know I'm supposed to feel, and you know, I mean, they put the thought chip inside my brain and stuff, so I know it's a great thing, but it's $90 million that we can watch them play Pop Warner.
Could have been on the other side of the river, hanging out over the Whitehead-Conlon Highway.
Yeah,
the Patriots could have been in it.
Right. I think it'll be fine. It's a little bit of a problem having the football games played in East Hartford, which is not really where UConn is, but it would only really be a problem if students from UConn went to the games and drank alcohol and then tried to drive back. And my understanding is that doesn't happen.
What?
There shouldn't be any problem at all.
There'll be no alcohol consumption? Is that what you said?
My understanding is that's just not something they do very much.
What?
Drink alcohol.
Yeah.
That's what I've been told.
Okay.
So it should be fine.
Well, I feel better about it myself now, having heard that.
Yeah.
That's a lot better.
The stadium's good.
Right. All right. Joe Connison coming up.
Huskies over Alice.
Yes. It's about a minute before four.
Our next guest is Joe Connison. Joe Connison and I are the only two men in America that Ann Coulter is afraid of.
I don't think she's afraid of you, actually.
No, actually, she's not. I just thought I would try to include myself in the umbrella of his greatness. Is it actually true that Ann Coulter is afraid to be on TV with you?
Well, she skipped out on an interview that had been rescheduled to afford her the opportunity. So, by Kudlow and Kramer, the CNBC show,
right?
They said they'd have me on to talk about the book, but they wanted me to be on with her, and I said, fine. And then her people said, well, it has to be on Wednesday instead of Thursday, so I said, okay.
Yeah.
And I showed up, and she didn't, so.
Well, we should explain that Joe Connison has a book out called Big Lies right now, the right-wing propaganda machine and how it distorts the truth. And this book, by the way, is interesting in its own right and stands completely on its own, and it's completely unique and different from all other books. But it is kind of interesting that right now, after, you know, years of kind of cascading vituperation from the right wing, it does seem like there's suddenly a Joe Connison and Al Franken and maybe a little bit more of Molly Ivins, a Paul Begala, a Sidney Blumenthal. There's some an Eric Alterman. There are books coming out all of a sudden that kind of attempt to parry some of the thrust that came from the right wing over the years. Is it any coincidence that this is all happening kind of over a fairly short stretch of time?
Well, we were first.
Yeah,
My editor, the guy who published my last book at St. Martin's, Tom Dunn, came to me actually in a year ago, last July, and said, I want you to write a book about what makes you angry about the right-wing attacks on liberals, and keep it short, and do it fast. And I did it in 4 months, and then they held it because of the war. And so it's just come out now, but I think we were ahead, and then, you know, Al's book was supposed to come out in about a month from now, and they rushed it out because of the Fox publicity, and maybe because of my book, too. But there are a whole bunch now, and I think so. Eventually, other people began to get the same idea. And, you know, there's always been an argument from the left. I mean, we've always been able to muster a counter-argument that I think is very strong, but now I think people are beginning to feel that this administration in particular has been deceiving them about a lot of things.
No kidding.
Yes. And you've noticed that too. And therefore there's a receptivity in the public. Also, I just think people in the center left, you know, liberals, progressives, moderates, are getting sick of hearing all this whining and caterwauling from the right all the time and all the invective and nastiness.
Made. By conservatives in order to malign or condemn liberals or Democrats or whatever. And I mean, basically, this is sort of a point-by-point rebuttal of a series of arguments made kind of from one side of the
other. That's right. There are 10 chapters, and each one takes on one big lie that I think has helped the conservatives to not only dominate the discourse, but also to, in many cases, demonize liberals or make people think that liberals and progressives don't have our Kirillov thought all that needed to be answered because, frankly, they're not in a good position to point the finger on most of these issues. And secondly, let's try to have a debate, a national political discourse where we talk about ideas and about where the country should go, and not saying, oh, you know, you're not patriotic, you're immoral, there are a whole bunch of insults that they've used, and this is what I tried to address in the book.
Are you ever uncomfortable having to kind of do the same thing that they do? I mean, I in particular, there's a chapter in which you sort of rebut the sexual peccadillo argument, but in order to do that, you
only one way to do that, isn't there?
And I mean, I've done the same thing on the air here. I mean, just list some of the, you know.
As I say in the book, it's an unpleasant and sort of morally exhausting or mentally exhausting task to go through all of the incredible number of, you know, unhygienic behavior that these conservatives get up to.
Just get to mentally picture, like, Newt Gingrich doing it and stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, that picture sort of forces its way into your head no matter how hard you fight it off after you read enough of this stuff. So, I mean, I don't go into anything graphic in the book. I'm just saying this guy did this and this one did that, and they're a bunch of hypocrites, and they should stop pretending. See, the point of this is the hypocrisy. They need to stop pretending that they have the moral high ground, that they can point the finger at other people about moral issues. It's true, liberals are and progressives are more tolerant of people's sexual misconduct and their you know, weak people's weaknesses in that area. But I think that's good, actually, because it shows that we understand human nature a little better and ready to cut people a little slack. And it's not a political issue anyway, in most cases. So I thought, you know, you have to do that. And I think that chapter has certainly made them squeal.
The, we sort of traffic in this stuff all the time, too. I mean, in a lot of these arguments, whether it's about crony capitalism or about the argument, the fundamental argument that, at the very least, conservative fiscal policy is every bit as misguided or capable of going kablooey as anybody else's.
Much more often. I mean, the statistics are incredibly clear about this. They're not very good stewards of the economy. They don't really know what they're doing. They think they know how everything works, and what that really means is that if they want to take anything that isn't nailed down.
the thing that actually, I mean, I was glad you got into this in your book was, one of the things that Rush Limbaugh, who precedes us on this show, is always talking about the invisible hand and the free market and all this kind of stuff. And, I mean, obviously there aren't any free markets.
Invisible hand in the cookie jar.
Yeah, right. And George W. Bush is the best example. You chronicled this very well in your book, but, I mean, the way he got rich, basically, was by having government intervene on his behalf in what should have been private capitalism.
That's
and
true.
Rip people off and jerk people around and then hand the proceeds over to him.
Right. Well, it's a family tradition, as you said. I mean, much of the chapter about crony capitalism is devoted to the saga of the Bush family fortune and how it's been accreted over time by this kind of activity. So, this is the way the world really works, unfortunately, under this type of capitalism. And it's not very good for the country. It's not good for the world. And it turns out it's not really so good for the economy, because when they get caught, as Enron did, then you set off a cascade of people losing confidence, really, in the markets. And that hurts capital. It hurts our enterprise system, which really ought to be working to benefit everybody.
We're talking to Joe Connison right now. His book is called Make No Mistake. His book is called Big Lies, Right-Wing Propaganda Machine and How It Distorts the Truth. And we're going to come back in just a second here. One of the things that I found the most surprising in this book was actually the 10th part of it. I mean, we do talk about a lot of these things, but the last chapter is all about terrorism and who really had a handle on it and who didn't. And some of the stuff in there I found very fascinating. We'll be back in just a second.
I'm Mike Allen, flying in at 1 eastbound 84, comes to a stop. Good mile before exit 46 Sisson Avenue. It opens up at the Bulkley Bridge. Westbound, you'll chug along from the Hartford side of the Bulkley out to Flatbush. Southbound 91 slows 33 Jennings Road to the 84 West exit. South of town, not bad, a little heavy at 28-15 south. Northbound 91 slows at 27 Brainerd Road up to exit 29. No delays on Route 2. Mark?
Thank you, New Haven 95 northbound. You're slowing 41 up to 43 Campbell Avenue and again 52 out to 53 in Brantford. Southbound 95 looks good. Southbound 91, no problems into the 95 merges. In Waterbury, eastbound 84, look for every traffic from the Middlebury-Waterbury line around exit 17 up to 26 in Cheshire due to construction. Next report in 10 minutes on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Hi, I'm Joe Fury in the New England Weather Service. A very pleasant, gorgeous evening across the region. We'll keep clear sky going. Temperatures are there in the 70s. Refreshing northwest breeze at 10 to 15. Sundown around 7:30. Clear tonight. 50s outlying spots around 60, low 60s downtown on the shore. Tomorrow becoming partly sunny, a little more humid in the afternoon with a high temperature Friday into the lower 80s. Late tomorrow, especially tomorrow night with a cold front coming in, a few showers and thunder showers around those. Tomorrow night, muggy, 65 to 70. And the big question for the holiday weekend, how far south does that front want to move away from the region? If it goes far enough south, the weekend's not all that bad with a mix of clouds and sunshine. Daytime highs generally in the 70s, and we stay on the cooler side of the front. But at some point in time, a few showers might try and sneak up from the south. But the wettest area should be areas, say, Long Island out south through the mid-Atlantic. Right now, we have a dew point of 49. Very nice out there. 77 at the weather station. WTIC News Talk 1080.
Summer may be winding down, but the stormy weather season is just getting started. WTIC News Talk 1080 is your number one source for accurate local weather information.
Thanks, shot for showers and thunderstorms not until late Friday or Friday night.
Joe Fury, Bob Cox, and the New England Weather Service will let you know of potential severe weather, including thunderstorms and hurricanes. So keep your radio tuned to WTIC News Talk 1080 for the weather information you need. Updated every 10 minutes, weekday mornings and afternoons, even on the web at WTIC.com.
Here's the deal. If you're scared of going to the dentist, I have a great solution for you. That's Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld. That's Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld right there in Avon. He caters to cowards. He specializes in people who are so afraid of the dentist. Well, anyway, he's so dedicated to making your experience so very comfortable. He provides you with headphones so you can bring in the music that you love. Bring in that Elvis Costello, that Dashboard Confessional. And he works on you with state-of-the-art equipment. You listen to state-of-the-art music, and the future of dentistry has changed anyway. They already had high standards of care, but now they get the breakthrough technology of the new dental laser. Welcome to the comfort zone. No drill, no noise, no numbness. Dr. Rosenfeld is delighted to offer the new dental laser to his patients. Not to use, but to be worked upon. Quicker and quieter, the state-of-the-art water laser replaces the drill in most instances. Over 20 years of teaching and hands-to-the-mouth experience, now a water laser, too, gets exceptional dentistry, the maximum comfort. Bridges, crowns, bleaching, bonding, your care and comfort is the chief priority for Dr. Rosenfeld and his staff, Linda and Magdalena. Call 674-0707 for an appointment and for the smile you've always wanted in the atmosphere that spells success. Most insurance accepted, located in Old Avon Village on Route 44 in Avon at the sign of the Silver Toothbrush. Easy packing in some evening hours. Call Dr. Jerry, the dentist of Creator to Colors. 674-0707.
Save money on DVDs when you buy them at Blockbuster. Right now, all previously viewed DVDs, including Adaptation and Tears of the Sun, are 25% off the already low prices. Details in participating stores.
My name is Troy, and I met my fiancé on eHarmony.com.
My name is Tom, and I met my fiancé, Brenda, on eHarmony.com.
My name is Jack, and I met my wife, Jennifer, on eHarmony.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. These are just a few of the thousands of eHarmony matches. Dating services give you a picture in a paragraph. We go a lot deeper. We start with a personality profile that features 29 dimensions of compatibility, crucial to a long-term relationship. And if you go to eHarmony.com right now, we'll give you this $40 profile free. And then we'll find you a soulmate based on compatibility in the most important areas of life. Visit eHarmony.com today. Get your free personality profile.
Hi, my name's Daniel, and I found my fiancée, Allison, at eHarmony.com.
A lot of happy couples out there tonight, thanks to eHarmony.com.
The Bruce and Colin Show will resume shortly.
Hello, Joe. We're just about to smoke a fatty with these two suave mothers got on the last stop.
UConn football is brought to you by Hoffman Auto Group, Stephen S. Chinnitz and Associates Attorneys at Law, Donner's Clothiers for Man Vernon, and Yale Peabody Museum's Hall of Dinosaurs, New Haven.
$10,000. You heard it right. At Newman Lincoln Mercury, save $10,000 off MSRP on a brand new 2003 Lincoln Aviator. The SUV that has the U.S. government five-star test ratings for safety has been voted the best midsize SUV by the New England Motor Press Association and best pick in its class by the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety. The Lincoln Aviator has room for seven with all-wheel drive for the winter weather ahead. Equipped with full power accessories, including power windows, door monolock, dual front airbags, and side impact airbags. Plus, some even have power moonroof, rear entertainment system, and heated and cooled front seats. So what are you waiting for? Get to Newman Lincoln Mercury and save $10,000 off MSRP on all new Lincoln Aviators before they're gone. They'll end September 2nd. Only 14 in stock. For value pure and simple, it's Newman Lincoln Mercury, 585 Connecticut Boulevard, East Hartford.
1, 2, 3, 4.
We're back. We're with Joe Connors, and his book is called Big Lies, The Right-Wing Propaganda Machine and How It Distorts the Truth. And if you want to even get more up to speed on the kind of stuff Joe Connors is talking about, you can either read him at Salon.com or the New York Observer, or you can look at Bob Herbert's column today in the New York Times op-ed page about how the Bush administration has violated virtually every single promise it made about education. You can read the lead editorial in the New York Times today about how the Bush administration is sort of giving away our environment right now to its cronies. Or you can read this kind of amazing piece that Al Gore has, this full-page piece sponsored by Move On, also the full-page ad, and I think in press more than one newspaper in the country today. But mainly, you should buy Joe Connison's book, Big Lies. Hi. Hi, Beth. For good time, I'll ask you what you thought of the Gore thing. But I wanted to talk about this 10th chapter because I think, you know, one of the high grounds, if that's the way it should be put, that George W. Bush has been able to seize is the idea that he's the guy who can fight terrorism, and he's the guy who's got the stomach to do it. And similarly, as you say, there was sort of an attempt to kind of suggest that the Clinton administration somehow or other might be responsible for our vulnerability to terrorism. And you really do kind of pick that apart in an interesting way.
Well, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, back when all that Newt Gingrich and the Republicans wanted to talk about was Clinton's genitalia, and Monica Lewinsky, Clinton was warning the country and the world about terrorism and the problems that we faced. He started the entire government program to deal with biological weapons, you know, started to ordered vaccines to be made, took many, many steps to try to thwart Al-Qaeda, some of which were successful. You know, you can look back and say, oh, well, he should have gotten the guy Bin Laden before. There really wasn't much of an opportunity to do that, and they certainly tried. The Republicans had very little interest in this at the time, and when they came into office in January 2001, two things happened. The Hart-Redmond report, which was prepared by a bipartisan team of senators and others, led by Gary Hart, a Democrat, and Warren Redmond, a Republican, gave them a multi-volume study that had been prepared at Clinton's behest over a period of a few years that was completed in January 2001 and said, look, these are the things we have to do to get ready for the fact that we are going to be struck on our own soil by foreign terrorists. There's no doubt. That was ignored. Basically, you ask Gary Hart about it, have him on your show sometime, I'll tell you. They threw that in the garbage, Dick Cheney and Condi Rice and the rest of them. Second thing that happened was, or around the same time, Sandy Berger, who was the National Security Advisor to President Clinton, and George Tenet, the CIA Director, and Richard Clark, who was the National Security Council's Director of Counterterrorism, had a transition meeting with Condi Rice, and they had one with Dick Cheney, and they said, look, there is no problem that you're going to face that's as important as terrorism in the coming administration. We've been obsessed with Al-Qaeda. We've been trying to deal with them. It's a huge problem, and you're going to have to deal with it, and there won't be anything else as important. And Dick Cheney basically said, okay, thanks a lot, bye, and I'll study this myself later. And he never did anything. He literally did nothing until September 12th. I mean, you know, if they had one meeting, it would be a miracle. They did nothing that mattered, I should say, about this until it was too late.
Well, Ashcroft stopped flying on commercial airlines. That's something.
Well, you know, they say that wasn't for that reason. But, you know, there were all kinds of... No, and then afterwards, they told various fibs about this. I mean, Condi Rice said, well, we've never thought that they could ever use an airliner to attack us. And 3 weeks before, when the president went to Genoa for the G8 meeting with all the Western industrial nations, they had surrounded the city with anti-aircraft batteries because they had a message that terrorists were going to try to fly an airliner into the place where all the heads of state were staying. So of course they knew this. I mean, they didn't know about the specific attack. I don't want people, listeners, to think I'm saying that, but they knew that terrorism was a big danger, and they just had not been all that interested in it.
Well, Joe Connison, the book is fun, and it's fun to thumb through, and you can take it into bars and get in fights and stuff like that. The book is called Big Lies by Joe Connison. It is the right-wing propaganda machine and how it distorts the truth. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Bye.